Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. All right, folks, it is now or never. And before I get into Feedback Friday, let me just get you focused on the closest event that's coming up, the Red Pill Expo, Indianapolis, Indiana. You want to get there. You want to be there for July 9th and 10th. You know, you want to get there probably on the 8th. And if you want to leave a little late, I think they have kind of a wrap-up on that Monday afterwards, which would be the 11th. But you want to make sure you're there. Now, I've already, in my previous shows, I'm going to say this as much as I can remember when I tell you about Red Pill Expo on the daily basis, because I want to promote this all the way up into this. If you want to go to Red Pill Expo, don't even worry. Don't even put yourself into the position of flying. There's more and more information that's coming out. There's lots of pilots. There's lots of people that basically have just retired. The baby boomers are saying, I can retire now. I'm going to retire now. The airline companies, I believe what's going to end up happening is Biden, if we do not get rid of Biden, he may actually pull the airline companies public. In other words, he may actually just get rid of the airlines and say, because of a national emergency, we have to seize full control over the airlines just so we can get everybody going. And basically, like Obamacare and everything else, they will have full control over the airlines. And so even though you may actually have, you know, Delta and the companies, over time, it'll be U.S. Air. And believe me, they went bankrupt years ago. And we're heading into, because this is what you get when you have a totalitarian, fascist type of leadership that believes in collectivism or statism, which is basically just a nice word of saying communism. So Red Pill Expo, you want to be there. And the reason why I want to make sure you get there is because we want you to meet Paul Venable, a good friend and a good, you know, a good patriot and a constitutionalist. This guy teaches the Constitution. He understands and knows the Constitution better than most people. And I don't even want to say it that way. I mean, he teaches the Constitution, and he actually, if you look in his wake, some of the people that have been out there that have been in his classes are, it's a pretty impressive resume, because these guys are out there, you know, combating the Convention of States and a lot of other people. And so it's great to find somebody that has that kind of an impact in motivating people to become a, you know, a constitutionalist. Anyway, he'll be there. He'll probably speak briefly. He will have a table. He will have his petitions. And, you know, usually they let, you know, anybody that's running for office an opportunity to just kind of get up and talk really quick. And so that'll be either on Saturday or Sunday. But you want to be there just because this is where you can actually get engaged with somebody that's actually doing something, engaging in the solution, and not just complaining and saying, vote for me so I can become your problem. Because that's what happens. That's exactly what happens. Because politicians think that they have all this latitude. They believe in the definition of politics, that it actually applies to the Constitution. There is no allowance for politics. Just to be clear, politics is the art of compromise and coming to an agreement, coming to an accord. And there is no compromise built into the Constitution. There's no way you can get yourself to all agree in violating the Constitution. Well, you can, but it's not constitutional. It is a violation. And speaking of such, that kind of lends to the feedback. I know that what you really want me to talk about is what's come from SCOTUS, but I don't want to talk about that yet. One of the things that kind of came to me, and a gentleman, some feedback I got this week, and actually, it was a phone call, so people actually do call 425-270-5416. And I got a phone call, and it was very interesting. The person, you know, we wanted to have a private conversation, excuse me, and he wanted to talk to me about, about the John Birch Society. And so his message basically was, hey GR, I know you're a real critic of the John Birch Society, so I'd like to talk to you about that. And I'd like to talk to you about your perception on what they're doing regarding the convention states, because he's really concerned. He's very, very concerned because he sees, and we've all seen over the past legislative season, four states flip. And that should bother anybody. With the Biden, if the Biden administration stays in, this is how they're going to do this. If the progressives can maintain power. Now, we already know that they have the mechanisms of maintaining power because of the election process that they're clinging on to. We have to get out. We have to start demanding. We have to start using petitions. And that's why the petitions I'm starting on are just easy no-brainers. Get rid of Biden. The petitions we're starting on are the easy no-brainers that actually get you out there to demand the getting out of the UN, stopping the invasion, these types of things. You need to create petitions that will be tailored towards your election, because believe it or not, folks, elections don't happen the same way in every state. There are four or five states, or maybe more now, that do mail-in ballots only. If you have a mail-in ballot state, you need to actually have a First Amendment petition to end that, to actually be able to get full accountability. And we have a motto in America that not one person goes to jail based on the presumption of innocence. Because of the presumption of innocence, that keeps a potentially innocent person. So in other words, guilty people don't go to jail because of the presumption of innocence, because we believe it is far better for a guilty person to go free than an innocent person to be incarcerated or to be punished for something they didn't do. And so we have it's kind of a very lenient system, but once we have guilt, they need to be punished. And so if we can all agree, there's politics here, we come to an accord, if we all agree that, these criminals, we do have a pretty lenient system. Now, we've been proving with DNA and these other things that some of the wrong people were convicted. We really should. I think we owe it to everybody in the criminal system to confirm, if there was DNA collected and if they can go back and actually confirm it, they should, to absolutely understand that that person was either guilty, and we have the DNA evidence to prove that, or that person was not. And so I honestly think, it maybe has to be driven by the appeals, but I honestly think that as a society, we owe that to them. We put you in jail, and now we have better technology to confirm this, and we should actually, as technology comes to our availability, if the desire is to ensure that nobody spends a day incarcerated when we know that there was this presumption of innocence, or now even proof, we owe that to them. So anyway, getting back to this JBS feedback, he wanted me to talk to him about the convention states and how the John Birch Society talks about the ratification, or they ignore the ratification debates, and they ignore the fact that the ratification debates actually dealt with the original Constitutional Convention, that they were not out of scope. And so we can continue to rehash, but why? Every state that actually contested it, and Virginia was probably the most contentious over the scope issue, because they had a lot on the line. They were the most powerful state in the union, commerce-wise. They were the ones that were wheeling and dealing, more so than New York. And so and that's right, folks, Virginia was much bigger than New York. Anyway, if you understand, because all the commerce that was flowing in and out of there, if you understand that even Virginia kept on getting up, there were a few people that just, wouldn't let it go. Patrick Henry was one. He kept on bringing it up and throwing salt on the wound, saying, these guys were out of scope, how dare they, kind of stuff. And bottom line, it kept on coming back to them. Why are we revisiting this? We already put this to bed. We took a vote that they were not out of scope. Let it go. And so this is one of my biggest problems. But actually, one of the things that I was talking to him, because he goes, well, why are you such a critic? And this is what I really want to convey. I actually reached out to the John Birch Society. I had faith that these were good people. I had belief that the leadership were good people. However, they quickly proved me wrong, or I shouldn't say quickly. It took about a year's time, but they instantly turned their backs on me as they realized that, you know, when you look at Republic Review, it is designed to actually get rid of this system, get rid of all government overreach. This is going to lead perfectly into the SCOTUS feedback as well. But what we want you to understand is that I didn't create the sides. I didn't create the animosity. They did. When they started lying to people and telling people that I have been an advocate for the Convention of States, that with Republic Review, that it's a portal to a Convention of States, in other words, misrepresenting me and telling people, and they've actually, we're dealing with patriots that won't even, and these people are great people. I can't even disparage them, but these people have such illogical, emotional ties to the John Birch Society friends that they have, and their friends, these people have said, this guy you can't trust. And I'm going, you know, to me, that's not a good organization when they misrepresent. I mean, it's one thing if they said, hey, G.R. Mobley kissed a gal that had a questionable reputation when he was in high school. You know, if it was that, then I could say, okay, I'm guilty of that. But that's not the case here, folks. The fact is they've manufactured, misrepresented, and they have lied, and they've actually attacked me with lies in public. We've actually had this documented, and the gentleman, well, I'll finish this when we come back because I don't want to bleed into the break. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so a few years back in a local grassroots organization that happened to be named Northwest Grassroots, they had me come in so that I could really talk about the party and have a conversation about the elephant in the room. That was the name of the presentation. And so they actually videotaped it, and they captured on the video the questions being asked at the very end. And the people that came in to ask me questions, the questions they asked had nothing to do with the process of actually dealing with the Republicans or the rhinos and the elephant in the room, because that was the focus. I've briefly touched on Republic Review, but the whole focus was my book and so forth. And the way they posed the questions, they made insinuations or so forth so that the audience would think, you know, not to trust me. And one of the things, because it got into this, you know, I don't want to say contentious, but it was probably contentious, where a John Birch gal was basically saying, you said that Thomas Jefferson called for committees of conference and correspondence in Resolution 8, and I have Resolution 8 right here, and he didn't call for that. And, you know, I said, that's not Thomas Jefferson's resolution. At that point in time, I didn't understand what the source was that she was citing. Come to find out, and I don't know the guy's name because, you know, I'm bad with names, but I actually have it documented, and we proved this. This was a representative from Kentucky who did a rewrite because he thought Thomas Jefferson's words of calling for conference and correspondence were a little bit drastic and, you know, felt that it would have been better to go with a softer version. However, that being said, November 10th, they actually went ahead and rubber-stamped Thomas Jefferson's resolutions, and that's what Virginia responded to. Now, they may have later had conversations otherwise, and Kentucky may have actually, you know, softened up a little bit, but they didn't soften up to a point where they didn't want to actually call and unite the Union in enforcing the Constitution. That was still their desire and intent. However, when it came back from the other states, and you need to read the book, or I should say the article, Interposition versus Nullification, or Nullification versus Interposition. If you read that article, and it's on our Constitutional Articles page, we get into all the nuances and the details of these resolutions and so forth. But to be clear, this gal who was a John Birch member who played a role in impugning my character actually just said, no, you're wrong. This is Thomas Jefferson's. And that was an outright lie and misrepresentation. And she was reading it. And so, because I wasn't even prepared to actually go down and try to defend, you know, other documents and other articles or my books or anything. I thought that people would want to get engaged in the conversation of what do we do when we're dealing with a corrupt Republican Party? What do you do? I mean, not everybody lives in Wyoming where they actually have really decent local Republican parties. But there are plenty in blue states where I live where the county party is absolutely corrupt. I can say that with Spokane County. Spokane County constantly has been swings under corruption. It's currently got corruption in it. And so it's an important dialogue. But the fact is how they wanted to basically obscure the conversation and attack me. So my point, folks, is that, you know, I may be hard on the leadership for the John Birch Society, but they deserve it. They absolutely deserve it. I mean, I've only asked, and I believe that we all have to be sitting at the table. And when I say all, anybody that claims to understand the Constitution to a degree that can actually stand up and academically support their positions, then I believe that we deserve to be sitting at the table and actually having an open, if it gets heated, it gets heated. But I believe if we're objective, it shouldn't get heated. I mean, I'm willing to reread the Federalist Papers. I'm not willing to reread Personal Views. And just to be clear, I want to specify, when you read my articles, I really try not to cite any personal views. I only do it once, and that is with James Madison's reply to John G. Jackson. Because it was a reply, it was a letter for somebody formally requesting his documents on the notes on the Constitutional Convention. And his reply said, you know, it doesn't matter what we thought the Constitution to be. The only thing that matters is how the states were sold it by the delegates. In other words, he was pointing to contract law. So that's why that's the only time I really try to include these personal views, especially when it comes to Republic review, especially when it comes to actually getting the states to actually assert their authority over this Constitution. They already have the authority necessary. They are the final arbiters. We need to understand this, but let me move forward. So SCOTUS, and let's look at this whole past 2 years or year and a half under the rule of the tyrant Biden. And so SCOTUS interestingly comes out with this, the release or getting rid of the overturning of the Roe v. Wade. What we want you to keep in mind is they already turned their back on the Constitution regarding the election to allow this tyrant in. They had a responsibility. They didn't have a responsibility regarding election fraud. They didn't have the responsibility regarding election or voter fraud. They do have the responsibility in guarding this Constitution. What they did in D.C. with the Bob Scholz First Amendment petition and basically summoning Congress, in other words, accepting standing and jurisdiction and then sending and summoning Congress and ordering them to respond within 60 days. That right there meant that they understood what was happening. All of a sudden, they say, oh, you know what? This could mean bad things. And the federal court backtracked. In other words, they tried to unring a bell. And bottom line is, when they have this no accountability, because the courts have no accountability, and this is why we need to change this whole system. This is why I kind of complain on this, that we need representation in the court system. The states deserve a Republican form of court system, not some academics that can actually drive agendas and become, you know, what we'll call oracles or, you know, demigods in telling America what we can do, what we can't do. We need to completely revamp this. This is another awesome justification why we have to definitize the Constitution and neuter the court from being able to ever create laws ever again. But the fact is that they overturned Roe v. Wade. And the fact is, recently this week, they also basically made a ruling regarding the Second Amendment rights of carry. So here's the question. They let and have actually allowed Biden to do all of this damage, and everybody is suffering because of the court system. If you want to understand where the blood really lies on the hands of America right now, why you have to pay as much as you do for gas, why you're paying as much as you do for food, so forth and so on, then you have to understand that both Congress has blood on their hands and SCOTUS. SCOTUS had the responsibility, and a year ago in June, it was June 19th, when they came back and said, oh, you know what, we think you have to prove standing to us now. Even though they already moved forward and summons Congress and ordered Congress to respond. Where do they get off doing that? Oh, I'll tell you where, because nobody holds them accountable. And nobody can hold them accountable. And they don't even recognize the First Amendment petition. You can't even petition the court with a First Amendment petition. You walk in, you have to pay a fee to file with them. What? In other words, where in the Constitution does it say, well, you can actually create fees, or because that becomes an abridgment. That becomes an abridgment to our rights. And I want you to understand, this is how far SCOTUS has taken us away from the Constitution. So we don't have friends in SCOTUS. And technically, we shouldn't have friends in SCOTUS. SCOTUS should be the guardians. They should be the final guardians of those things that are within the jurisdiction of the federal government. In other words, those things within the enumerated powers. And so I just want to leave this with you. As I told you, that there are reasons why the federal government, and specifically SCOTUS, does the things that they do. So why did they do this? Why did they actually make this ruling on the Second Amendment? And if you read the comment, if you read the comment in the ruling, the opinion in the ruling, it points to, because Clarence Thomas was the one that added this, he actually pointed to Taney, because I've told you about Taney. Taney was a racist judge, and Taney basically said, blacks, you know, if you make black citizens, that means that they'll be protected under the Constitution, and they can carry guns with them wherever they go. Even Taney understood the Second Amendment rights. And now the federal government is trying to play with the Second Amendment right. They've been playing with it, and they've been manipulating the states to get the states to play with it. You see, the federal government has really forced has forced the Bill of Rights upon the states, except for those things that they want or they find unfavorable. First Amendment petitions, unfavorable. Second Amendment rights, unfavorable. You know, being secure in your person, kind of favorable, but not favorable. In other words, they can create a police state, but they definitely don't want you busting in on, you know, their communist meetings where they're planning, where the Weather Underground is planning the bombing and, you know, doing this shock and awe and so forth and so on. Anyway, folks, I want to leave it there. When we come back, I just want you to know that SCOTUS, they're setting everybody up. This is what you need to take away. They're setting everybody up for a wave. They're engaging. I'll cover this when we come back from the break, because I don't want to rush through this. And then we'll take care of the last of these issues for our constitutional issues. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so who inspired Pontius Pilate to wash his hands? Right? Who did that? I can tell you it wasn't the Holy Spirit that guided him in allowing Christ to be crucified. And had to have been Lucifer. And as a matter of fact, the Rolling Stones have a song that talks about how Lucifer basically inspired him to wash his hands. So that became a symbol or a gesture that he, you know, didn't want to have any blame, but absolutely he wore the blame. He was the one that allowed the crucifixion. But to be clear, you know, those sometimes these gestures, you know, become a perception, but it's not the truth. What we're seeing here is the opportunity that SCOTUS just dropped two really strong arguments. And this is why I have to go through this in detail. Because bottom line, in the Roe v. Wade overturn, they clearly say that because this clearly is a state issue, this must be managed and handled at the state issue. They also caveated this, that you cannot construe that even though this is not an enumerated power and makes it a state issue, all other things that aren't enumerated powers don't consider those things that apply to the same rule. In other words, we want to make it up as we go along, and SCOTUS is going to get caught this way. And they know this, but they did this as a gesture, because what's going to end up happening, who do you think is going to now be invigorated to demand that the court get stacked? Who do you think is going to be invigorated in this upcoming election? You know, if you want to get the left and you want to get the Democrats to ramp up and actually try to use drastic measures, don't be surprised, folks. Do not be surprised if they try to do real drastic measures this year to control and take away the ability to take back our government. This is what tyrants do. This is what despots do. And they're going to use, you know, the outcome of these cases to prove that the rights of the people are being denied. Hold on here. How is that even happening? You got to make sure that you look at the big picture, because what we're going to probably see here in America is a pretty dark and ugly, I'll even say evil day. They're only getting darker. They're only getting eviler. I hope and pray that this is sufficient evidence for you to understand and know that if you don't get involved, if you don't start getting serious about your liberty and about defending this Constitution, well, then it's now or never. Then it's going to be too late very soon. So it's now or never, folks. I can't say this enough. And so one of the many things that we needed to talk about the uniformity clause. So getting back into the constitutional positions to campaign on for the county, state, and federal elections for 2022 and on, we've got the uniformity clause that we would want to talk to. And bottom line, this type of clause needs to be, and I'll just say has to be, redefined by the states. In other words, when we definitize the Constitution, the states really need to hammer out what they believe that that uniformity clause means. And this is where the states need to, and we have to focus on making amendments driven by the states, but not via convention. One of the things the states need to do in the first amendment that they need to drive into the Constitution, once we have republic review, and once these states actually actualize the power that they possess as the parties over this compact, then they need, the first amendment they need to articulate is the removal of the convention clause out of Article 5. In other words, getting rid of the ability for the states to ever, ever again rewrite the Constitution. The states already have the power to get Congress to do its bidding, because we're going to show you with republic review, it can be done. The states have that level of power. And, you know, when it gets down to it, when we need things done, the states can get it done. The federal government is completely dependent upon the states. This is something that people really believe that we're dependent on them. We're not. As a matter of fact, what they're doing is they're poisoning us. They're killing us. And they understand exactly what they're doing. And they're doing everything. Almost all of these things they're using to poison us, to kill us, all of these things are unconstitutional. This is why I keep on telling you, when you're talking to somebody that is a promoter of the, let's say, the sovereign citizen movement, or, you know, the martial law, or all of these different things out there that, oh, the federal government's doing this and doing that, or our government is all corrupt. Folks, there is no evidence whatsoever in the Constitution, even in the state constitutions, that supports these things. In other words, anybody that makes the assertion, say, okay, fine. If you believe that's a legitimate assertion, show me in the constitutions, both the federal and the state, where the authority was delegated for them to do this. Well, then don't talk to me about me responding to something that is a fraudulent, something that is a facade. Why waste our time on chasing things that aren't problems? Well, they're a problem, but they're not legitimate problems. In other words, you fix a fraudulent problem by going after the fraud, saying you didn't have the authority to do that. You don't say, hey, you've got these government corporations over here. You can't do that, and we're going to fight you on that. No, no, and this is how we fight you. We become sovereign citizens. That's the stupidest thing a person could do. Hope you understand this. I'm not trying to insult anybody, but come on, let's not react. Start challenging the validity of things first. When the Pauls go out and blab, oh, we gotta audit the Fed. All they're doing is helping legitimize the Fed. Tell me how that's a good thing. It just legitimizes and gets them deeper entrenched. Oh, well, you know, at least they're abiding. But no, they have no business to exist. That's the paradigm we have to have. That's the paradigm of demanding full compliance to the Constitution. Okay? So the next one that we wanted to go through is the 16th Amendment. And I've said this a lot, and I've said this enough. And bottom line is, the 6th Amendment only gave Congress the power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source is derived without apportionment among the states and without regard to any census or enumeration. So in other words, who and how they can do incomes, it's okay. But show me anywhere where this actually goes outside the uniformity clause. The uniformity clause still says that, hey, it still has to be uniform. In other words, if you're going to go down this path, you can't create an extra punishment for one person because they're more successful than another person. Social justice is unconstitutional, and the 8th Amendment states that you can't have excessive fees or fines. In other words, everybody should bear the same burden. And the Uniformity Clause and the 8th Amendment do not allow progressive taxation, period. So you understand? We now have a petition to be able to go after the 16th Amendment by using the Uniformity Clause and the 8th Amendment. Stacking the court. We've talked about this a lot, and there's some petitions that go with this, but bottom line, and I've just recently talked about this today and this week, that in stacking the courts, we have a real problem, and this is why we need to go down the path of actually petitioning. And so I'm just going to get into the petition again. We need the states to restore limited jurisdiction to the federal court system. As a matter of fact, we need to disband the overall districts of the federal court system, because bottom line, the federal court does not have the jurisdiction to take on all of these cases. These are really state cases, and we need to get the states in the same petition and demand that the states restore their common law courts. States must restore the true punishment and ban excessive payouts, excessive fees, excessive fines, excessive taxation to incentivize enlightenment. We have to start looking at, if we want to make America great once and for all, we've got to get back on the path of enlightenment. And enlightenment actually is where we all acknowledge that if society moves in this direction, then it is better for everybody to do that. But the fundamental direction must be based on individual liberty and individual sovereignty. I can't emphasize that one point enough. Now we have additional constitutional issues here. Again, I'm going to be posting this in the next week or so. My focus now is going to be working on the article for the First Amendment petition. I can't believe I said Anyway, I really try not to do that. Anyway, we want to get the First Amendment petition done. We're tying it to the take action PowerPoints that we have out there for you, so that you can kind of understand how this all works together. We're not telling you what you have to do. We're giving you the ideas and showing you. You can call it whatever you want. You can. It's your name. I hate it when somebody comes along, this shall be the name. No, it's your county. Call it what you want. But if you focus on the Constitution and demand constitutional compliance, then you will understand that it is essential to kind of have a name that really captures the essence of what you're doing. Anyway, when we come back, we'll get through the additional constitutional issues. And don't forget, folks, we are starting the ratification debates on Monday. And that will start with the scale of liberty and the paradigms that created the Constitution and the ratification debates. We'll be right back after this. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADD-LOCAL or visit them on the web at www.addlocal.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so you can tell I'm not the consummate professional, or I should say professional entertainer, because I don't care about entertaining, but I do care about professionalism. And I think you can at least expect me to hold a high standard when it comes to information. When it comes to information regarding the Constitution, I strictly live within the standards of academia. You prove to me these things exist, but I apologize for coughing with the open mic. I did not realize that the mic was still, or the volume was, or my mic was still on. So anyway, sorry about that. Now, let me move forward. There are a lot of different additional constitutional issues that are a part of this document. So we've covered basically 36 of the 40 pages that we have, right? And so what we have left are the other 4 pages of things that, you know, we can't deny, things that we have to understand. Some of the things that you need to understand that I think this all helps everybody understand the bigger picture. You need to understand the amendments that were never ratified. You need to understand how and why some of these amendments were actually presented and why they even passed or why they didn't pass. You know, nobody understands that the Department of Labor was absolutely, you know, put out there in 1926 and was rejected. And so why was that? And look, the federal government exercises this thing called the Department of Labor and sets all these standards. Hold on here. Where's the amendment for this? The reason we have to start looking at all of these things, because it helps us see the bigger picture. Okay? So there's the additional amendments and even understanding the amendment issue. Now, a lot of people, they just ain't going to take the time. They are just not going to spend that time to learn about things that never were. But understanding why they never became or they never were, I think helps us understand or reflect on what we have. We have to start also talking and understanding the details of common law. This is why I brought Paul Nally on board the one time. I never got him back in because I'm just getting behind schedule. And that's all my own fault because I expound on some of this stuff too much. I apologize if it's that way for you. But we need to get into our dependence and getting our dependency back to common law courts and common law grand juries. We need to start actually demanding the enforcement of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment and having this conversation. We need to start literally clearing out. This all points to definitizing the Constitution when we start creating the limitation of federal jurisdiction, whether that be for land, whether that be for roles, whether that be for responsibilities, whether that be for powers, or whether that be for criminal jurisdiction as well. We need to go through the each states. But one of the things we also need to focus on is corporations, big tech, and how these companies, and we've covered this already, but these companies do not have the authority to take away your inalienable rights. That is an evil thing. And as a matter of fact, the government is to protect your inalienable rights. And so they need to make sure the companies, this is why if everybody took an oath to office, if we had a corporate oath that as a U.S. citizen, you acknowledge and understand that as you conduct business for your company and you hire people, you cannot take away their inalienable rights. You cannot conflict with this Constitution and the state Constitution, so forth and so on. We also need to look at how tech is failing to pay their share, especially big tech. That, you know, when it comes to sales tax and the basic little commerce out there on internet, they're already paying their share. But I'm telling you, the big tech companies, they're not. Google has gotten away with still stealing billions and billions. Look at how big and affluent they are as a company. There's no doubt in my mind that many of the things that they are doing, they have not paid their taxes on. Facebook does the same thing. I mean, how many people advertise and those ads that hit your feed, your news feed, right? You see those ads all the time. As you're going through your news feed, you get an ad. Well, when you click on that, Facebook or somebody makes money off of that, and Facebook gets paid. And so here's the thing, folks. Is that revenue, when you clicked on that transaction, because you're sitting in the state of whatever, umpty frats, did that get registered to Facebook that they now have to pay the taxes due on that transaction that they just received, even if it's a penny? You got to remember, folks, if millions of clicks occur a month, trillions of clicks occur a year, or billions, then we're talking about a significant amount of money that Facebook, Google, or whomever, Amazon, is not paying the states. You're joining the club. Joining a club and giving them services and so forth, that is corporate revenue. If they're making money, so does Costco. I mean, we need to start shifting paradigms. When you, even if you walk into the local Costco and you join that club, that means Costco is making money off of that. That's feeding and paying overhead and other things. That becomes a money maker for Costco. And so is Costco paying your state off of the corporate revenues that they make for your annual fees? No. Now, that would make your fees go up, possibly. But the fact is that they're not paying your state for those types of things. Big tech, big companies are not paying their fair share. And so this shouldn't be a hostile environment. Bottom line, government shouldn't be doing as much as it's doing either. Taxes should be going down. And so we're here to help point out these types of things. Business supporting the Constitution and not agendas has to be a conversation that we need to move forward. I can't tell you enough. Basic criminal law reform needs to be dealt with. We really need to have these conversations because I'm telling you, folks, you and I are suffering because they're violating the Eighth Amendment. When you're paying a flat fee, that means it's an excessive fee against you because other people don't have the same amount of fee because they make more money. And so what we need to do is we need to, and it's the same thing with taxes. If taxes should be based on percentage, not by a flat amount, and penalizing people who make more. It is antithetical to individual liberty to hold people, some people to one standard and other people to another standard. Absolutely antithetical to a land of liberty. Everybody needs to be held accountable to the same amount. It's one of the things, and most of my friends of, you know, different races, regardless of what race you are, most of them will absolutely be the first to tell you it's such an insult to be placated for the progressives to come along because of your, you know, your ethnicity, because of your race, you can't do any better. So we got to help you. Now, there are opportunists that want to exploit that and say, yeah, gimme. You know, that's what the reverends did with the blacks back when welfare started coming out, because they actually benefited by getting more and more of their people onto welfare, because now you got free money and now you're going to be more free in giving that money to them in the collection plate as it goes around. At least that was the theory, and that's what it actually helped elevate the pastors and that evangelical movement, because it's all about money to them. It's not about saving souls. Anyway, as we go down these things, we also need to look at the candidate and public servant accountability. This is the ultimate check that we have. We have been given the ability to keep our public servants and our government in check. We absolutely need to hold these people accountable. And it's not through protesting, it's through First Amendment petitions. Energy. I didn't really get into energy, but I'm showing you and I'm going to prove to you over time that energy, we can put energy upside down. We can make energy literally become a subscription where you have unlimited electricity and you only pay for your service, just like your cell phone. Now, I know with cell phones, they have data charges, but they have flat fees and services. And so what we want to do, and as a matter of fact, they don't do that with your internet though, right? Most internet, they will give you a threshold. This is what you can have. And actually some internet, because I remember when I was on Fios, they didn't charge you for the amount of data you pulled down. They started realizing that there were some users that were kind of heavy and so forth. And then they started putting out these policies that we want to punish you because even though our equipment can handle it, we think we can make more money and we think you're willing to pay because you're a heavy user. You download or you use the internet a lot. You move data up and down or what have you. You're a content provider, or if you do any IT type of work and you back up your systems and you do those types of things on a regular basis, you're uploading and you're downloading, that could actually put you into a heavy user. Well, are you kidding me? Anyway, green energy. We've already seen and we already know what's going on with this green energy implementation by Joe Biden. He's bypassing the constitutional limitations. He can't legislate, but because Congress can't do it, then he's going to do it instead. And this is a tyrant. This is why Joe's got to go. We need to start looking and having this conversation regarding compassion services. We've got to start looking historically for education and, you know, how we got to where we were and how the churches were gutted in the 1800s in moving all of these things forward. We actually need to actually go down all of these other, and I'll just say, all of these different powers and, I will say, roles, responsibilities that the federal government has assumed, we have to challenge all of these things, and we'll use First Amendment petitions in doing so. Remember, Monday, when we come back, we're covering the ratification debates. We're diving into the scale of liberty. I'm G.R. Mobley, Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.